You may be seated.
Well, hey, good morning. I'm Paul. I'm the Next Steps pastor here at Grace River. So glad that you guys are with us today. And we're in a series called Comeback Stories, and really relates to that song that we just sang, I've Witnessed It, that we get to witness the way that God has worked in the lives of four different people and their accounts in the Bible. And man, as we sang and then as Becky prayed, and for many of you who've been around, you know some of Becky's own story of witnessing God's faithfulness in the middle of some health challenges. And I'm just so grateful that we have a God who goes with us, who goes before us. But for some of us, it doesn't always feel that way. Matter of fact, what we're talking about today, for some of your friends or family members, it is one of the reasons why they make fun of church or why they are cynical about God. For some of your family members, it's the reason why they've kind of checked out and said they don't want anything to do with God. They don't want anything to do with your faith. For some of your classmates, it's the reasons why they say now that they're an atheist. For some of you, it was the reason why you hadn't been in church in a while. And for some of you, it may be even the reason why you, in the back of your mind, are wondering why you're still in church. Because at some point in your life, or some point in their life, God didn't act like they thought he should. Like, things were going a certain way, and you expected things to turn out a certain way, and they didn't. And I felt like, why is this happening? Like, why wouldn't God step into that moment and pull me out of that, or rescue that, or restore that, or whatever it was? And it has caused disillusionment and disappointment with God. Every single person that you meet this week thinks in some ways that they know how God should act. There'll be some situations happening, and they'll think, this is how God should respond in that moment. And then sometimes he does, but sometimes he doesn't. And in those moments, it causes people to question, is there a God? Is he loving and kind? Does he even care about my story? It's why, for some, we need a comeback story. It's the person whose mom was the most loving and the most kind, the sweetest, gentlest soul, and she loved God. She read the Bible, and she prayed, and she served others, and then she had what she thought was a cold, but it was cancer. And her family started praying, and her friends started praying, and people that she didn't even know started praying. And 6 months later, she's gone. It's like, of all the people, I mean, she was one of the good ones. Why didn't God answer that prayer? Why didn't he save her and rescue her? When it comes to our relationship with God, we tend to have these secret, quiet contracts with him. Like, we don't maybe say them out loud, but we've got these contracts with God in our mind. Like, if I faithfully give back to you, God, then you need to provide for me, and specifically maybe in these different ways. God, if I'm faithfully trying to serve you, then God, you have to make my children follow you. Like, they have to, and have them not do anything stupid too. Like, just like, God, you gotta take that, you gotta do that for them. It's the moments when you've tried to walk with integrity and character, and someone maligns your character, and you're like, God, I'm doing things the right way. You need to vindicate me. We got these secret contracts with God. Maybe you're single and you've been trying to honor God with your relationships, but the secret contract in your mind is, if I keep this high standard, then God, you have to provide me with someone to date and then someone to marry so that my life will be all that I've designed it to be. God, you need to come through. I'm doing my part. God, you need to do your part. There are moments in life for all of us where God doesn't act like we think he should. And what you do in those moments is really, really important. And we have to deal with this stuff because the truth is, if you haven't went through it, you will go through it. And often for us, multiple times in our life, where God doesn't act like we think he should. And in those moments, how will we respond? Because if we respond rightly, we can experience God in our life. But if we experience, if we kind of respond wrongly, it can derail us and derail our faith and leave us stuck and disillusioned. God not acting like we think he should, though, is nothing new. That might be encouraging. It might be discouraging. I'm not sure. But since the beginning of time, God has been doing things in his own way, in his own time. And it doesn't mean that he doesn't care. He does deeply, immensely. But he sees the world differently than we do. Like, we see the world from this very kind of small perspective, whereas God looks at everything from eternity past to eternity future. We see just what's right in front of us. And there's all sorts of times in our little limited perspective of a life where it doesn't feel like God acts like the way that we think he should. In those moments, we have two choices. Will we blame or will we trust? Will we blame or will we trust? When the comeback hasn't come yet, can you still trust? The thing with comeback stories is that, you know, like there's the sports stories, right, where the team's down by 20 with like 3 minutes left, they come back and they win. It's like the video that Pastor Chris showed last week with the Cardinals coming back in game 6 to tie it and then win it and move it to game 7 and they win the World Series. There's those kind of comeback stories. But when we come to life, when we come to just like our stories of loss or pain or difficulty or healing that needs to happen or relationships that need to be restored, almost all of our comeback stories mean that there's going to be pain, there's going to be hardship, there's going to be difficulty, and it won't usually happen overnight. Like, it's going to take time for the comeback story to come to fruition. When the comeback hasn't come yet, can you trust God? Today we're going to look at an account found in the Old Testament book of Genesis, first book of the Bible, Genesis 37 through 45. It's about 8 chapters. Tells the story, the account of Joseph. Joseph is one of the great characters of the Christian faith, and we want to look at the account of his life. And if anybody could have understood disappointment with God, it would have been Joseph. He could have easily blamed God, but instead he chose to trust him, even when God didn't act like he thought he should in his life. Genesis chapter 37, verse 3, it starts out, Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. He was the 11th of 12 boys. That's a lot of boys. I had 3. That's a lot of boys. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph, a beautiful robe. If you're new to the Bible, but you kind of know American culture a little bit, this is the Joseph in the amazing Technicolor dream coat. That's where they get that from. This is the coat. He's got this amazing Technicolor dream coat kind of thing. And his dad gets him this beautiful robe. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him. And we all read it like hindsight, and we're like, ooh, like that's not good. Like that's not going to work well in the family, right? You get him this beautiful robe. And you might know this even as a child. Like you felt like, well, you know, Jill's the favorite. You know, we all know that or whatever. Like it's one thing to like feel like your parents have a favorite. It's another one when they like buy this beautiful, colorful robe and give it to the kid. Like that makes it clearly obvious, right? And the brothers are ticked. It's a recipe for disaster in the family. And the brothers, I mean, this is probably like the bridge too far. This is the breaking point. To put it in terms that maybe we understand a little bit more today, it's like Joe's dad went and got him an iPhone 17 Pro Max with, you know, the sweet case and an Apple Watch with a leather band, AirPods, and the brothers are all walking around with iPhone 11s, and they're sharing a charger, and they can't update anything, and it's just a mess, you know. And Joe's walking around with his AirPods and taking selfies of him in his beautiful robe. And Joseph didn't necessarily help himself too much, by the way. Like, he has emotional intelligence later in life, but in this moment, like, not so much. Because in this moment, he has some dreams about his family, and the dreams, in essence, are telling this picture of all of his brothers and family bowing down to him. His mistake is that he's like, I think this would be a good idea to tell my brothers about these dreams. And it goes about as well as you would think it would. Verse 8, his brothers responded, so you think you'll be our king, do you? Do you actually think you're going to reign over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and the way he talked about them. Now, one day his brothers are out. They're taking care of sheep out in this kind of distant land, like not in the backyard. They've went a long way to kind of care for these sheep. And his dad asked Joseph, Joe's at home with dad because he's the favorite. He doesn't have to be out there, right? He asked him to go and check on your brothers, see how they're doing, and then come back and give me a report. So he goes to find his brothers. And they see him coming from a long way off because of, you know, the technicolor dream coat. They see it. Verse 18, when Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. Here comes the dreamer. Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and one of these wells. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him, and then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. And when he finally shows up, they end up beating him up, taking the coat, breaking his iPhone, throwing him in the cistern. Now, they decide that they're not going to kill him. Like, they're you know, so kind, these brothers. Like, you know what? He is our brother. We shouldn't kill him. Let's just sell him as a slave. Yeah, that's way, way better. Let's do that. And then they sell him as this slave. And they take his coat, and they rip it up, and they dip it in blood, and they bring it back to their dad. Like, hey, we found this on the road. Is this your son's? Not our brother's, your son's? And, of course, he knows it is because, I mean, it's the Technicolor dream coat. Like, there's not, it's like one of one, right? Like, so he's like, oh, this is my son. He's heartbroken. He knows his son has died. He's been killed on the way. Joseph's family seriously mistreated him. People that were supposed to have his back, be his biggest fans, became the biggest critics. And man, it cuts deep when that happens. Maybe you've even had that in your own life. You had family throw you in the pit, not treat you like they should have, treated unfairly. It's so easy in those moments to get angry, not only at them, but to get angry at God. Like, why, like my own family, like what's up with that? Maybe even get to the point of like, why was I even put in this family, God? Like, why am I in this situation? Some of you have faced some real pain, some real difficulty when it came to your family of origin. I was talking to somebody between services, and that was her story. Joseph faced disappointment, discouragement. Why would you let this happen to me? Why my own flesh and blood? And Joseph had a decision to make in that moment. Am I going to blame God, or am I going to trust him? Blame or trust? Joseph ends up being sold into slavery into Egypt to a guy named Potiphar. He was a commander with the military. He was up high in the government, and he's sold into slavery to his home. It says this in Genesis chapter 39, verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph. Isn't that interesting? Because it feels like, in some ways, where was God? If he gets thrown into this pit by his brothers, where was God in all of that? It says the Lord was with him. Here's the truth for most of us. I heard an author, a speaker, Peter Gregg, say this, that when it comes to these difficulties in life, what we want is we want God to airlift us out of the situation and bring us to safety. And sometimes he does that. But most often, he parachutes in. And in Joseph's life, God parachuted in. The Lord is with him. So he succeeded in everything he did. It wasn't Joseph's ability, it was God. So he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. Potiphar noticed this, and he realized that the Lord is with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. This pleased Potiphar, so he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything he owned, and we're like, yes, vindication. Like, his brothers messed up his life. They send him off to be a slave, but God is with him. He's restored to second in command of this house. amazing. Yep, his life is like moving forward. Good news all around. Joseph's boss's wife, Potiphar's wife, notices Joseph. He's young, handsome, built. And she starts pursuing him. Day after day, she's trying to seduce him, and he's not having any of it. I mean, he's been put in second command. He wants to honor Potiphar. He wants to honor God. One day, as he's in the house, she grabs him by his cloak like a robe. Like, he's got seriously issues with robes. He needs to just stop wearing them. She grabs him by the cloak, and he sprints out of the house. She's embarrassed because she's been rejected. And as the cloak sits beside her, she hatches a story. Genesis 39, verse 16. She kept the cloak with her until her husband came home. Then she told him her story. "That Hebrew slave you brought into our house tried to come in and fool around with me," she said. "But when I screamed, he ran outside, leaving his cloak with me." Another translation says, "He tried to rape me." How would you have reacted if that was your spouse? I mean, I think we would have reacted like Potiphar reacts. He's like, we're ticked, right? And Potiphar is ticked, and he goes and he has Joseph arrested and thrown into prison. And Joseph was trying to do the right thing by his boss, and he gets thrown into prison by that same boss. He gets falsely accused. And can you imagine the anger and the frustration and the questions that Joseph must have? Like, again? Again? I'm trying to do the right thing, and it backfires. I'm trying to be honest, and I'm the one that gets beat up. I don't know if you've ever been tempted to tell God off because you tried to do things his way, and somebody else who didn't give two rips about God, they end up getting ahead. They end up getting the promotion. They end up telling a half-truth, and they look good and you look bad. I've been there, where you tried to do the right thing only to be misrepresented and maligned. And rather than fight back and make the other person look bad, I tried to take the high road and just bite the bullet. And yet, you know, like, okay, people don't even know the real story, and they're getting this false impression. And God, why don't you just vindicate me? It's time to vindicate me. Time to make things right. Well, Joseph has a decision to make in that moment. Will I blame or will I trust? What am I going to do? Am I going to blame God or am I going to trust him in the middle of this? When Joseph gets thrown into prison, God, who is parachuted in, is with him. He doesn't airlift him out, but he's with him. Verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph in the prison and showed him his faithful love. And the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. Before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. We're like, all right, well, at least it's, we got that, right? At least now, like, he's getting raised up. Now he's in charge of the prison. He's in a position of honor. At least he can cling to that. Joseph makes some friends while he's in there. One was cupbearer to the king. Another was baker to the king. I don't know why they were thrown into prison. It sounds like the king is a little on edge. You know, like, hey, that's too much frosting or whatever. Like, you're putting you in jail. Both guys start having dreams, and Joseph is given the ability by God to interpret the dreams. And when he interprets the dreams, one of the dreams is like, ooh, actually the guy is going to die in just a couple days. The other dream is the guy is going to get out of prison in just a couple days. And he tells the cupbearer who's going to get out of prison in just a couple days, hey, when you get out, bro, hook me up. Like, say a good word for me. Genesis 40, verse 23. Genesis 40, verse 23. Pharaoh's chief cupbearer, however, ooh, that's not a good word, however, forgot all about Joseph, never giving him another thought. Man, like, are you kidding? Two full years later, I grew up, my kids watched some of SpongeBob, by the way, and all I can hear is like 2 years later. 2 years later, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing on the bank of the Nile River. Like, are you like for real? For real? Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers over a coat, over dad's, you know, loving him seemingly more. He's in prison because he was falsely accused. Now the one chance he has to get out of prison, the guy just forgets. Like, he got him out, and he just forgets? You can't just say one word. You can't just say, hey, this Joseph guy told me let me put in a good word for this guy. No, he forgets all about him. 2 full years go by. And Joseph's life, his family didn't act like they should. His boss didn't act like he should. His friends didn't act like they should. And Joseph is left with two choices, right? Like, am I going to blame God or am I going to trust God? And he could blame God, and the truth is, for most people, they wouldn't even blame him if he did. We had a friend through the years that we met in college named Wendy, and Wendy just was one of those people. Maybe you have people in your life like this. Maybe you are the person like this. Might be your story. Or just like anything bad that could happen seemed to happen to Wendy. You know, people like that? Where it's almost like they tell you something, and you're like, well, of course, it's Wendy. That's what happens. That's what happens in their life. It's just like blow after blow after blow after blow. And you sit there in those moments, you wonder, like, if I had a life like hers, if I had a life like his, what would I do? Would I be able to make it? And Joseph is just like blow after blow after blow. He could have given up on God. And the truth is, if we're honest with ourselves, I think a lot of us would say, I probably would have. It would have been so easy to just be like, well, forget it. I'm done. I'm trying to serve this God, and like, what is happening? I keep trying to do the right thing and nothing. But through it all, Joseph had learned to trust God. He'd seen God with him, that he didn't leave him, that he hadn't forsaken him, that he was faithful even in the valleys, that he wasn't airlifted out, but God did parachute in. And he experienced him in the middle of his pain. And he put his hope in God. He hadn't put his hope in his family. He hadn't put his hope in his boss. He hadn't put his hope in his friends. He put his hope in the one who actually is trustworthy and true. That God had the ability to move even in the disappointment of his life. And Joseph chose to trust what God could do rather than live and stay preoccupied in what he thought God should do. He chose to believe that he didn't know the whole story, that the final chapters of his life hadn't been written yet, that although the comeback hadn't come yet, it didn't mean his story was over. To trust in the middle of disappointment. Experiencing God's faithfulness in the valleys. They're the building blocks of trust that set us up for the comeback. Sometimes it's witnessing what God has done in someone else's life, even as much as it is as we witness what God does in our life. Your stories of God's faithfulness in the middle of your valleys encourage me. They remind me that God is there, that he's true, that he's trustworthy. And Joseph keeps trusting God, and check out what happens. Pharaoh has this dream, and he doesn't understand it. No one can interpret it. Finally, the cupbearer's like, oh, man, there's this guy I met in prison. He told me my dream. You should get him out. And so they get Joseph. And God gives Joseph the ability to interpret the Pharaoh's dream. He has this dream, and in it, basically, he interprets that there's going to be 7 good years of crops and prosperity, followed by 7 bad years of a terrible, horrible famine. And he gives Joseph the ability to come up with a plan of what to do during the 7 good years so that the country will be okay during the 7 really horrible years. And here's the response of the Pharaoh, the king. Verse 39 of Genesis 41. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has revealed the meaning of the dreams to you, clearly no one else is as intelligent or wise as you are. You'll be in charge of my court, and all my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on my throne, will have a rank higher than yours. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh removed his signet ring from his hand, placed it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in fine linen clothing and hung a gold chain around his neck. He had Joseph in this chariot reserved for his second in command, ride in it. And whenever Joseph, wherever Joseph went, the command was shouted, kneel down, and people would kneel down before him. So Pharaoh put Joseph in charge of all of Egypt. And Pharaoh said to him, I am Pharaoh, but no one will lift a hand or a foot in the entire land of Egypt without your approval. And Joseph goes from the pit to prison to the palace because he just kept trusting God, even when God didn't act like he thought he should. Now, what's interesting is that when he got thrown into the pit to the time when he gets to the palace, it's been 14 years. 14 years of struggle, 14 years of questions, 14 years of people that you thought had your back, didn't have your back, 14 years of being maligned, 14 years. I mean, think about for us, I said, what, 2012? That's like 8 or 9 years before COVID was even a thing, right? That's 3 years before the Grace River was even around. Like, where does that put you in your life? 14 years ago. That's a long time. Where it seems like things are getting worse and worse and worse. 14 years of dreams dashed, 14 years of disappointment. And listen, Joseph could have never have dreamed that when he was in the pit or when he was in prison, that he would end up in the palace, that he would end up second in charge of all of Egypt. Now, his brothers who hated him and their families now, because I mean, it's years later, 14 years of the palace, 7 years of good times and prosperity. They're now 2 years into the famine. And his brothers who hated him and their families are starving in a distant land. They come to Egypt looking for food, looking for work, looking for land that they could, they work, looking for hope. And to make the long story short, Joseph encounters them as they come face to face with him. They don't recognize him. I mean, it's been a long time. He's in Egyptian garb. It's been years. He recognizes them. Genesis chapter 45, verse 4. Please come closer, he said to them. And so they came closer, and he said again, I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery in Egypt. But don't be upset and don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. This famine that's ravaged the land for 2 years will last 5 more years. There'll be neither plowing or harvesting. God has sent me ahead of you to keep you and your families alive, to preserve many survivors. So it was God who sent me here, not you. He's the one who made me an advisor to Pharaoh, the manager of his entire palace and the governor of all of Egypt. Listen, this is so important that we see what's right in front of us. We live with such a limited perspective. We're overwhelmed by everything around us. But again, our perspective is so limited that sometimes it's hard for us to see God and God at work in our lives. It's not seeing the forest through the trees. But Joseph just kept trusting that even though he couldn't see it, God was still working and God was still moving. And here, listen, if Joseph had quit trusting God, because he hadn't come through. I'm in the prison. I've been in the pit. Like, where is God in all this? You know what? I'm done. If he had quit at 10 years, he would have missed out on God's great plans for his life. He would have missed out on the opportunity to love and serve and care for those people. And God would have used somebody else. If he had quit at 13 years, 364 days, he would have missed it. But he kept trusting God. Some of you are just months away, weeks away, days away from the breakthrough. You've been praying and praying and praying, and it's been 10 years, 12 years. You've been wondering, God, what are you doing in all of this? And you've been pressing forward, but it's like, okay. Like, you're just months away, weeks away, days away from the comeback story, from God moving in a way where you haven't seen that he's been working, but he's been working. And you may feel like you got every right to be disappointed with God. After all, in your mind, he hasn't acted like you think he should. But you can't see the whole story. And we have the same choice. Will we blame him or will we trust him? Will we blame or will we trust? Would you choose to trust the author of the story? That the final chapters of your life haven't been written yet. Don't put a period where God has put a comma. Don't put a period in your life where God has put a comma. God's not done with your story. And what you'll find if you'll trust him and follow him is that he's trustworthy, that he won't leave you, he won't forsake you, he'll walk with you. And Joseph could have at multiple times walked away, but he trusted God. He put his hope in him. He continued to move forward. He continued following. He kept taking steps of faith. He rejected sin. He walked righteously, and God blessed him. He'd experienced God's faithfulness, and each new experience with his faithfulness deepened his faith and trust and resolve to keep moving forward. And the same can be true of you. Do not put a period where God has put a comma. If your comeback hasn't come yet, don't quit now. But we're going to blame or we're going to trust. And blaming, I'm just telling you, will get you nowhere. It won't bring you what you hope it will or what you think it will. It won't lead you anywhere. And so what if you would choose to trust, even in the unknown, even while the questions are still hanging in the air, even when things haven't been resolved, would you still choose to trust? I heard one author say this, that the only thing worse than disappointment with God is disappointment without him. Would you choose to trust him? We're all gonna face times when God doesn't act like we think he should. In those moments, will you blame or will you trust? Will you blame or will you trust? We can blame him or we can trust him. To trust that the story isn't finished, to trust that he hasn't forgotten us, that he's still working. And whether it's 14 days, 14 months, or like Joseph, 14 years, will you trust that God's still working in your life? Maybe you've been running from him, angry at God because of what happened with your mom or your dad or with your marriage or with your kids or whatever it is where God didn't act like you thought he should. Would you dare to trust him anyway? And if there's a spark of hope in your soul, would you lean into that? If your comeback hasn't come yet, don't quit now. Choose to trust him. And if you've been trusting even for 14 years, don't give up now. You could be days away from the breakthrough, days away from seeing that prayer answered, days away from seeing the way that God has actually been moving and the threads that he's been working through in your life. So I wanted to just give you a couple quick next steps. Number one, would you acknowledge that you might not know the whole story? I mean, that's the reality of it, right? Like for some of us, we're just like, why didn't God do this? And I don't understand this. But the truth is we don't know the whole story. We have such limited perspective. So would you just acknowledge, I don't know it all. And so I'm gonna trust the one who's the author of the story, that he isn't finished yet, and that he's still working, and that he's still moving, even when I don't see it or fully understand it. Secondly, then, would you choose to trust him? It is an act of the will. I will choose to trust in him. I'm just telling you right now, it's way better than choosing to trust in ourselves or to trust in somebody else who can easily let us down. Would you choose to trust in him? Would you stand on the shoulders of the other people around you, the people in history, the people that we see on the stage, the people that you've walked through in life where they've witnessed it? And even if you feel like you haven't witnessed it yet, would you stand on their shoulders and choose to trust him, that he knows your story and he hasn't forgotten you and he's walking with you, That yes, he hasn't airlifted you out, but he has parachuted in. You are not alone. Third, would you refuse to quit? Refuse to quit. You may just be days away from your comeback story. And you've been praying and praying and praying for that prodigal child. And there's moments where you're like, it's never going to happen. Would you keep praying? Keep praying. Don't give up now. Don't quit now. You've invested too much. Keep going. Keep going. Keep praying. Keep seeking him. Don't quit now. And then fourth, would you get busy living? In the movie Shawshank Redemption, one of my favorite movies, Andy Dufresne says to Red at one point, you got to either get busy living or get busy dying. And the truth is, for a lot of us, what happens is that when we get in these moments where there's disappointment with God, when it doesn't feel like he answers the way that we thought he should, doesn't respond the way that we think he should, that we end up stuck. We wallow in it. We get stuck in it. We don't see a way forward in it. Would you just get up and get moving forward in your faith? Keep taking another step and another step and another step to trust him. When there seems like there's no way out, when you don't know how it's going to turn out, when things aren't settled, when the relationship isn't fixed, would you keep moving forward, trusting that the story isn't done, the final chapters haven't been written, he's still at work. Don't quit now. Get busy living. Keep taking steps forward with him. Keep walking forward. He knows your story. He hasn't forgotten. He's parachuted in. No one would have blamed Joseph if he would have just been like, I'm out. But he chose to trust. And God was with him. And God's with you. And I don't know how it's all going to turn out. And we don't understand how it all works. We have limited perspective. But would you choose to trust the author of the story? Don't put a period where God has put a comma. He's still writing it. So keep moving forward. Keep trusting him. The comeback, even if it hasn't come yet, it may just be around the corner. Don't give up at 14 years. 14 years in one day, in 2 days, in 3 days. Keep praying. Keep seeking him. You may just be days away. Let's pray. God, I pray that you'd help us to do just that. For some of us, God, we are in the moment. We're facing it right now. We don't know how things are going to turn out. We don't understand. Our child has not come back. The relationship has not been restored. We've been maligned by others and no one seems to know. We just take hit after hit. God, would you help us to trust you? Would you help us to not give up? To trust the author of the story that you haven't forgotten us. God, would you help us keep praying, keep seeking, keep moving forward. God, help us to not put a period where you put a comma in our life. To trust that you're still at work, that you're still moving, even when we can't always see it. God, we love you. God, would you meet us at our point of need today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. This